horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
Good Tuesday, race fans. Series 219, XM 201. Excuse me. Yeah. Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Series XM online and at our website, stevepick.com. You know, I don't know when it happened, but I guess I listened online at the Sirius, and at some point it was over. I think it was over vacation, and because I was curious what we were playing, and it was early. And anyway, once I did that, I now am getting reminders from the SiriusXM app. You know, listen now at the races on Sports 964. It's pretty cool. So I don't know. I guess all you have to do is tune in once, I guess, and right? Because I said that I've been using it more ever since Tina got me a set of those Beats headphones, which is tied in, you know, by Bluetooth to the phone, and so between the Sirius app and the BBC Radio 1, honestly, I can put the headset on, and of course Tina says I'm making myself deaf every time she walks by. She says, "Turn that down." If you were off yesterday, hope you had a pleasant MLK, and hope you maybe read any of the one of the things that honoring Dr. King offers is perspectives that are offered annually and reminders. So did some. I actually stumbled because of that. I stumbled into something I was unaware of. I don't want to go into a predictable rabbit hole, for those of you that might have, I don't know if you might have an interest, the Blacklist happens to be an area that I've always found fascinating, and yesterday, as in reading some things, led me to what's known as the Broadcast 41 and Red Channels. It was part of the Blacklist, and specifically 41 women that made their way on to the Blacklist. That there's a book that Carol Stabile, who's I think at Oregon State, anyway, so I ordered the book, and the book's online too, but anyhow, I just, part of the afternoon yesterday was spent in you know, social mindedness interests, put it that way. When it came to the racing part, Santa Anita and parks and fairgrounds, well, I guess I'll mention the stake first. And, you know, there was going to be, you know, pennies on the dollar for Astra for Neige Blanche, and 30 cents Juan Hernandez for Leonard Powell. And the Sal Cumin, Matticat, Laura DeSarue, Marcia Nafee, Matilda Powell ownership. for Neige Blanche, wins the Astra, the Grade 3, and the late pick 4 and pick 5. And even the pick 6 actually paid okay, considering, you know, field sizes and having a 30-cent winner in the mix. And frankly, Black Storm, the race before, was 3-2, and so was Closing Remarks. So if you wonder sometimes, should I look at this? Should I play it? And sometimes you shrug, but if you kind of make the exercise, a lot of times it's worthwhile. I mean, there was really only the first time starter in the maiden claimer, the Sean McCarthy winner, with Brees Blanc, who's back riding, and with a couple of wins actually since coming back, and almost 10-1 for Tom Bombadil, a tale of a Cotty gelding, breaks the maiden at first asking, and it looked like that kind of field actually, you know, one where you needed to look at a firster as an alternative. So I mean, I suppose that Big Buzz in the eighth race, that paid $13.20. If you found those two, I mean the jackpot sequence paid $700, paid $750. With favorites, a second choice, and then two somewhat tricky horses. I mean, it was basically, first of all, a pick five. So all you had to do was sniff out the firster and Big Buzz. That was it. And you cashed okay. Pick five, almost $200. So, you know, it's always worth at least perusing, right? I've got to mention at Fairgrounds as well, and Fairgrounds, $932 in that pick five. Doctrinaire, the nightcap winner for Keith DeSormo, $560. You had a 7-2 winner in the maiden race. You had a 2-1 winner, which was the 76th, 2-1 second choice, 7-2 second choice in the fifth. I mean, and a 7-2 winner in the first leg. Just unbelievable. And, you know, Gus laid this out, and I didn't do the parlay, but wow. So, again, sometimes, you know, You can't just shrug them off. Philly, the one thing I saw about Philly was, how about Kendrick Carmouche, who went down to Philly to ride a few? I love it. Carmouche, Carmouche is so gung-ho. And, you know, with the somewhat limited, right? I mean, the schedule, and you know, you had the Friday cancellation, but they had already drawn those cards. So Carmouche goes down to Parks and took a few mounts. He won one, and he's got mounts. He's named, I think, only on one today, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if he'll make the trip. Actually, no, I take it back. He does have, he's got two today. So he's going back. All right. Carmouche. A few things, too, that we're following up from yesterday. And had a couple of guests, actually, that got pushed back. And Michael Wright is going to join us, as well as Glenn Kozak. And looking forward to talking to Glenn about the news over the weekend about Saratoga and Belmont. So we'll get, that's about 10 o'clock. We'll look for a visit from Glenn. And I also want to ask him about the read a little bit more about the bar that they're going to build as well. So we'll get the latest. And you know, I'm curious. I one thing about this that you know, there has not been a replacement named yet for Martin Panza as you know a senior racing director and so forth. And you know, when this planning for the Wilson shoot, I started wondering, you know, about the racing portion of when it comes to the condition book and what the you know, the discussions were on that front. You know, this is, and I mentioned yesterday that been a couple of horsemen, you know, that are regular participants on the circuit, Graham Motion and Mark Hennig, you know, wondering aloud about, you know, what is it going to mean? Is it going to take away? Does it mean there's going to be less routes, you know, less full two-turn routes? And, of course, mile and an eighths at Saratoga, you know, the one circuit. Frankly, those mile and an eighth races are notorious. I bring this up with Andy today, actually. Let me make a note about this with Andy. I'm curious what his thoughts are. Because those mile and an eighth races have invariably been dominated on the front end. Notoriously so. I mean, to the point where when you handicap 9 furlongs at Saratoga, you just pretty much assume that whoever's up on the lead, you know, unless there's a phalanx of potential speed horses that could actually contest the pace, but the front end has always been dominant at the mile and an eighth. We'll see. We'll have a conversation. But I want to ask Glenn about the planning because you know certainly. I mean, a lot of the discussion, I'm sure, you know, had Martin involved, given his role. So we'll examine it from several angles, and we'll get an update as well on if you saw the coverage of the Franchise Oversight Board meeting, Pat McKenna was quoted about you know, how the pre-work was already underway this fall after the meet at Belmont ended in November. The work that had to be done in advance of this tunnel that will open up the infield. So Glenn Kozak in a little bit, top of hour two, Andy later, and more. Oh, you know, one thing I wanted to do that I saved from yesterday, if you didn't see the letter to the editor style that Richard Mandela wrote on Sunday for, published on Sunday at Pollack Report. And this gets back to Dr. Blair and what, you know, really appears to be just a you know, a political hit job and a smear. And I'm going to read Richard's letter, and you can... you can judge for yourself where this, you know, where this is. I've known Jeff Blaya for over 20 years. He became my main veterinarian, I believe, in 2006 when Rick Arthur retired. I have trained racehorses since 1974, and I'm fortunate enough to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. typical self-effacing... Richard Mandela. I believe I've had some of the best veterinarians work for me, starting with Jack Robbins, Rick Arthur, and Joe Cannon. As they retired, Jeff Blaya was next in line. I would say that Jeff is one of the best I've ever met, However, that would be an afterthought compared to his integrity, honesty, and desire to make racing a safer and better place. Dr. Blair remains an outstanding ambassador to the sport. Jeff is highly educated, well-experienced, honorable. He's always conducted himself, so his actions align with the best interests of equine athletes. He was president of the AAEP and the Southern California Equine Foundation. He has served on numerous boards, committees, aftercare programs, and research foundations. Dr. Blair always discussed and made sure I understood the plan when deciding medication, treatment, or procedures with the horse's best interest in mind. This is not like small animal vets that see the patients once or occasionally. The veterinarians are here every day, as well as the trainers and assistant trainers, and they know the horses very well. In a 2015 interview on I Am an Equine Veterinarian, Dr. Blaise said, there's an inordinate amount of trust between a human being and a horse. I love being around horses, being outside, working with them, and working on them. The racetrack is a unique environment, and the people are what make that community so enjoyable. When I retire and look back on my career, I'd like to say I was ethical, I was honest, I did not tolerate lying, I was a good father, I was a good friend, I was a good human being. Unquote. I would say the man I know lives this statement. He didn't just make it up. Dr. Blaise is thorough, thoughtful, scientific, and ethical in his medical approach. His honor and exceptional care for equine welfare should not be in question or carelessly attacked. For a man to overcome his injuries, his left arm and hand were paralyzed from a training accident while he was a jockey in his teens, and to have the career that Jeff Blaise has had, he deserves an award of some kind instead of trashing the man's life and not just his career. Richard Mandela, Hall of Fame trainer, Santa Anita Park, Arcadia, California. You would think, and from what, based on internet response to, links to the letter, there's been widespread acclamation to Mandela's support for Dr. Blaise, but again, we're back to the internet mob mentality that. Has drawn conclusions that based on bits and pieces and on what as Dan Ross and Jay Hovde detailed seems to be veterinary board versus CHRB loggerheads and infighting. So in the meantime, Dr. Blaise and the industry at large and in California has to suffer from this kind of a character assassination. It's very, very frustrating. The grandstanding, too, that has gone on in regards to this. A few things to slip in, and probably cover some. I'll cover a lot of the stuff that is pedigree and breeding associated with Sid tomorrow. But one fun part of this time of year is the foals that are dropping, and a lot of first foals, and a few of the highlights. And also we have to cover, we have to do is cover, I should get hold of Brian Bouye about foal patrol. The first foal dropped already on foal patrol. And if for those of you that aren't familiar, the museum, the Hall of Fame, they've been doing this, it's probably five years already, 6 years, who knows? And it's tremendous fun. Foalpatrol.com, if you have not gone. And it's basically, cameras in a handful of stalls of in foal mares. And the first one that dropped was late last week, Traveling Tiger. And that was the first. And the next one is Spanish Bunny at Gainesway. Just looking it up. Expected to foal around around Groundhog Day, actually, February 2nd. There you go. Boy, if this fall, if Spanish Bunny's fall drops on 2/2/22, they offer you up a few fun options for names. Spanish Bunny in February due, and a late, we'll talk about a headliner in this group, a late is due March 13th at Claiborne. Repetta, she's due at the end of March at Three Chimneys. And then a New York foal that's expecting a late baby, a May foal, Floripa, who's at Old Tavern Farm near Saratoga. So, this is the fifth season, like the steak. This is the fifth season of Foal Patrol. So if you've never been, take a trip over. It's a lot of fun. Foalpatrol.com. I should really get Brian on. Anyway, the first foals, a quick rundown. Vacoma got his first, a filly who was born at Crowning Point in Paris. And Lauren Nichols bred this one, Bay Philly, out of Bella Alicita, a Bellamy Road mare, stakes placed, actually. And so Vacoma's a daddy. A Global Campaign, who, of course, is at Windstar, and I should mention that Vacoma stands at Spendthrift. Global Campaign got his first foal at Country Life. And I got a nice note from Sally Ellen, and I saw where Christy at Country Life was quoted, and this was on Friday or Thursday. Maryland bred, obviously, and this is a Country Life product, and a filly out of Miss Mystique, multiple stakes placed. So Global Campaign. Caracaro got his first, and this was also on Thursday at Ocala, and Giraluna Stables, Dr. Gilberto Lopez, Real Ruffian, a Ghost Zapper Dam, got this first foal. And I'm just trying to see if it's a colt. There you go. So Caracaro, and Tom's the Tot got his first here in New York at Waldorf Farm. This was on Sunday. Saw that one as well. Windstar's Tom's the Tot, the kind of a senior first crop stallion. And there was two overnight, actually. Game Winner got his first, bred by Macmer Hall, a filly. And Maximum Security got his first as well, a filly. A lot of fillies. And Gary Mary West, there you go, bred by the West. Perfect. We'll have to ask Sid about this one, out of Pussyfoot, a Tisnow, and the full sister to Morning Line. So, my favorite of the foal, when the pictures of the foals in the jackets when they got them all bundled up, it just always makes me laugh. They always look kind of, they always look not silly. They look cute. Look kind of funny. Let me get a few other results in from the weekend that we didn't get to yesterday. We touched on the Santa Anita Calbred card. How about a couple of the Sunshine Thousands that went Saturday at Gulfstream? That Sham Rocket moved, who's a senior at this point, a 5-year-old, and he tried the dirt. in the Sunshine Classic, and did okay. The race was not a fast, did not come back fast at all, but Shamrocket, last seen in the Red Smith, and having won the point of entry in the fall. 70s, I think it was a 70s something, 73 buyer. So not, he won't, I don't know if they were thinking, I don't know if they're thinking Pegasus or what the, what is the plan. You also, we haven't talked about Olympiad's race yet, but Olympiad was overpowering in that allowance. That was a very good performance. And he comes back with a 101 buyer. And boy, every time, you know, last seen in the Cigar Mile, this was a mile and a 16th. Olympiad, you know, you think back to that allowance at Saratoga that Baby Yoda just exploded and then, you know, has gone sideways. But Olympiad starts the four-year-old season nicely in here. Cowboy Diplomacy ran well for Pocket Aces. Was a good, hard-trying, determined second in there. And Highest Honors, third for Mr. Farish and Shug. Another big effort, actually. Gatsby's run in the sprint for Arundel. That was rock solid. And first triple-digit fig for Gatsby. This is the Brethren Gelding, you know, who's been down. He was down at Gulfstream all, you know, late fall and early winter in allowance company and the Sunshine Sprint. And one of the nicest stories of the weekend, in fact, at Gulfstream. And even though, you know, it was just a, you know, on paper, just a maiden race for the three-year-olds. But if you hadn't seen this and if you go back to, you know, last year when we had Heedley Bell join us to pay tribute to his mother. And one of the nice things that that happened over the weekend, Mom's Moon. And, we talk about these when you name a horse after somebody or you know, with somebody in mind. And way more often than not, it doesn't work. You end up kind of frustrated. But there's only so many, you know, Frankels that where, you know, the idea pays off. But Mom's Moon, that Mill Ridge, Doc Chandler and the Bells and everybody involved, named for Mrs. Chandler. And Mom's Moon shows up for the three-year-old debut, gets completely ignored, going a mile on the turf, and Wile E. Coyote himself, Rusty Arnold, unbelievable, wires the field, holds off another big price. Mom's Moon was 43-1, paid $87.60 with Jaramillo over La Makina, who was 20-1 for Danny Gargan. Rusty Arnold, and you know, it set off a nice celebration for Team Mill Ridge. So congratulations to Heedley and the family. But as an aside, it should be noted that Rusty, going into this race with his second time starters, maiden second starts, 29 of them, so the last year and a half with on Formulator. He was hitting already at 24%, okay, with his second timers. So you're looking at 29 starts. So 24% would be 7 wins with his last 29 second timers. For an ROI of $4.51, that means that on average, his winners, those 7 winners, paid an average of $18.70. All right? So, 8-1. Now he is 8-30, which would be 26%, and the ROI is $7.28. Rusty Arnold is perhaps the most underrated, might be the most underrated horseman, you know, divided into length of career. It's amazing. He just does a tremendous job. Part of this also, in fact, Andy may bring this up, because, you know, not only was the story, you know, fun because of the Chandlers, not only was there Rusty and his statistics coming into the race, but Mom's Moon is out of Sweet Assay. The dam of Analyze It. Now, Analyze It was Point of Entry. Mom's Moon is A Kitten's Joy. But how do you completely ignore this horse coming back, second start, debuted at Turfway on the synthetic? So, you know, make of that whatever you want. But, technically it's a turf debut. And you got pedigree and you got Rusty. So, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Because Andy texted me later in the evening. And he said, did you see the 40-1 shot? The big pedigree play at Gulfstream? And I had not. I was distracted. But unbelievable. So I'm sure Andy will bring it up. Congratulations to Rusty and to Heedley Bell and everybody, Doc, and everybody at Mill Ridge. Nice story. We're going to get our visit in with Michael Wright. Looking forward to it. And Case, let me send you. His information, because it'll be the first time that we've had him on, and it took a little bit of work, because like a lot of the Canadian horsemen and Toronto-based horsemen, they've got a Canadian phone, but nobody wants to use their Canadian phone in the U.S. because Rogers extorts outrageous fees from subscribers. So I had to dig up his burner, his Florida-based burner phone. So I thank everybody who responded, because I reached all over the place to find Michael Wright's information, and that included Eric Parenti up at Woodbine, and also Allison DeLuca as well, down at Tampa, and It's funny, of a few of the people who I asked for the, I said, do you have Michael Wright's number? And they said, no, but if you get it, send it to me, because they wanted to reach out. And that included Cassie, I tried Scott Lane up at Woodbine. I tried, who else? I was all Eric Pignataro, the jock agent, who handles Olaf Hernandez's book. The winner on Nantucket Red, but there's a lot about this win that, you know, based on the conversation I had yesterday with Meg, Michael Wright, very interesting, has had a very interesting career, so we're looking forward to this. And you know, it's funny because in finding those horses that I brought up with Richie yesterday, I also you know, sent us in a bunch of other directions as well, and I found another horse I want to bring up probably tomorrow with Sid, because of this London Company, a Firestone runner that Leroy trained. And this is another horse that Time forgot. It's amazing. Almost $500,000 in earnings in the mid-70s. And, I mean, basically cashed a check every single start of his career until the end. Yeah. A son of Bolero. Excuse me, a son of Tom Rolfe, out of a Bolero mare. London Company. So another horse that, I mean, I go... And that actually got me into a funny aside, because I'm, you know, when I look up some of these things, like for instance that story, that Dave Joseph byline story from the Sun Sentinel that I found regarding and Michael's going to be a few minutes, he's just finishing up with a horse. But when we were talking about that Scott Zanna, and so I you know, went and looked her up, and I really did not have any memory of her, despite probably having seen her in New York or in Florida. And so when I look up these articles, I'll put in a combination of words. I'll put in Migliore, Wright, First Lady, Scott Zanna, and... You know, newspapers.com, you'll give you know, a whole bunch of responses. Miami Herald and the Sun Sentinel. I think that piece actually was in the Miami Herald, not the Sun Sentinel. I think maybe Dave went to the Sentinel later. But, you know, all of this it keeps triggering, you know, different searches. And when I mentioned, you know, finding this London Company, and then I wanted to look up Bolero as well, so I look up Bolero, and here's a horse that was a son of 830 and had at age 2, 3, and 4 set either track records or later a world record in the Malibu in, I think, 1951. I mean, I've seen this horse's name in pedigrees, but I knew nothing about him. So now I start, you know, I put in Bolero, what I found actually was the horse that broke his track record at, and now actually I think it's no longer on my screen. Yeah, I think it's off my screen. But it ended up leading me into a whole area I didn't expect, and that included a visit to the story on the same page. There was the story of the Cotton Bowl incident, where the Alabama player comes off the bench to tackle the Rice running back who was streaking down the sideline. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, you remember the punt, pass, and kick library books that I've brought these up before, because I had them all. And there was one that had the title, you know, Strange But True Football Stories, or right? Yeah, Strange But True kind of thing. And I think on the cover, actually, is an illustration of that incident. So next thing I know, I'm reading about I'm reading about this story that I think we probably all remember reading about at some point as a kid, I found out probably more than I absolutely needed. Dickie Maigle was the Rice running back, and Tommy Lewis was the Alabama player that jumped off the bench. And if you've never seen this, it is quite something. And Rice killed him, killed Alabama in that Cotton Bowl, 1954 Cotton Bowl. Look up 1954 Cotton Bowl if you've never heard of this, and it's right up there. With Roy Riegel's, running the wrong way. It's one of the most famous incidents in college football history. But for whatever reason, it was on the same page. And this is the problem. This is the problem when you start fooling around on when you do any historic research in this game, because it. Especially if you've got other, if you're interested, you see a headline and it draws you off into some other direction. So we'll talk to Michael here in another minute or two. And I'm as interested in the rest of his career as what's going on right now working for Colebrook Farms. For John Brennis, and yesterday mentioning his name, I got a bunch of emails and texts from people who were delighted, to hear his name, and were looking forward to having him visit. So, Michael Wright, momentarily. While we wait, let me slip in a couple of other items from the weekend. We talked about the Oaklawn action with that was fun yesterday with Johnny Ortiz, and got a bunch of good updates. And one of the other, actually, we'll save Rated R. I should reach for Danny or for Federico. We haven't had Federico Villafranco on in a while. There we go. Move that. Okay. The other Tampa pieces that we should mention, right? Yeah. From the Pasco and the Gasparilla. Let's do that. There they are. Boy. And the Pasco had a bit of an upset. Juana Villa, Santa Rosa Racing, with their social inclusion colt, May Colt, Markhamian. And Markhamian followed up the maiden win with the Pasco. And nice effort at 5-1 with Manessis aboard. We'll have to find out more. I was just checking because I the figs were slow coming out of Tampa. 82 buyer from Markkanen, and that's a nice next step from the 76 in the maiden breaker, which came against that restricted, you know, Florida, those restricted Florida races, and we'll look forward, look ahead, basically stalked Provocateur, the Pletcher race, my racehorse, Spendthrift, player from the rail, coming off a maiden win himself, and took over and won well. Outfoxed for Ellen J. Foxwoods. Happens to be, this is interesting too, because it's a filly that was bred by Bayoma, by the Chews. And Outfoxed, $360,000 OBS purchase in April last year. This is one of those Valiant Ministers that, you know, Valiant Minister had that splashy sale. And here's why. And this, of course, the Mott trainee that broke the maiden in the Susan's Girl and then came back and won the My Dear Girl. Turned back to start the season. Hadn't been seen since that My Dear Girl going a mile and a 16th at Gulfstream. So we already know that Outfoxed can go two turns. And was even money and had to fend off Goddess of Fire for Todd, a Brunetti mineshaft filly, last seen in the Tempted. That was a solid effort. So, and this was a 78 buyer, and of course Strategic Bird, who Mark had mentioned, Mark Cassie had mentioned with us, the Gary Barber runner, was targeting this and ended up third. Had been 2 for 2, so we'll see how they come out of this. There was also a nice maiden winner in this couple of maiden winners, one on the turf and one on the main. Princess Ellen, Cairo Prince filly, won for Alnaz Ali with Canonias at 40-1. That was in the seventh. It's tough at Tampa. I tell you, you better eat your Wheaties to get through these sequences. And you know, Sid was Sid and Cece. We'll talk tomorrow probably. Sid was at Tampa and got to be in the winner's circle for Mr. Fipke's Cheryl's Spite in the allowance that came after the 3-year-old stakes. And there was a really fun, looked like a really fun day. There was a big group that went Stable Duel, and Chuck was there, and Barry, and Sid was there and got to be in the picture for this win. This, of course, Roger Atfield. This is the 5-year-old out of Perfect Cheryl. So I'm sure Sid will talk about it tomorrow. And then finally in the nightcap, Chad with that 2-to-5 shot investment strategy for Seth Klarman and from the rail. And in fact, Chad might have had winners in New York and on both coasts in Florida, as it happens. So, that was the rest of the Tampa. What do you think, Case? Is Michael ready for us? not the other way around. We're certainly ready for him. Okay, Case is trying him again right now. You know, one of Chad's wins at Gulfstream, we ran against us in that maiden claim group early on the card Saturday, and even though Claude Ray, you know, was beaten, I don't know, 10 lengths probably, ended up seventh, but he did something he has not done before, and that is showed speed and went to the front, responded to Sean Bridgemahan, and very encouraging performance. And Sean said something interesting to Susan about him. Said, try him on dirt. Bring him back and try him on dirt. Very interesting. And you know, he's run on dirt twice, and on paper it doesn't look great, but he said, Sean said, I think he'd be okay on the dirt. He said the one aspect of Tapeta, the synthetic that's tricky, he's a big horse, and his hind end has given him some trouble. And you've got to have plenty of hind end strength on the synthetic. And so Sean said he thought that contributed to him tiring, but he had Chad's horse Conglomerate was basically pressing him from the bell. But we're very very encouraged with Claude Ray, and first time he's ever shown that kind of speed, not. He hasn't gotten out of the gate well in a lot of his starts. So that was kind of a step forward. All right, so we're struggling. Now we're having trouble getting a hold of Michael. Ugh. All right, Case. We'll go up toward the top, and we can always shift him to after Glenn. That's an option too. We can always come back to him. We're going to get him, but he gave Casey a different number to call. This is the system. What are you going to do? This is how it. I also got a nice note. We're talking about Foal Patrol, and I mentioned as part of the global campaign, baby that was dropped at Country Life. Sally Ellen Hurst sent me a note. CLF has Country Life Farm has gotten. I'll put an address, a web address for you on Twitter. They've got the cameras as well, and essentially full patrolling, and you can watch their mares. So they do a great job with their clients, and they put videos up on a regular basis, and they do weighing. They weigh the babies, on a regular basis, and they put those videos up. Country Life does a tremendous job with the newsletter and communication. Lots of communication vehicles. All right. Well, okay, so I'm tap dancing all I can here. until we get Michael. the Nantucket Red and the win on Saturday. And one interesting question here. She's now a 7-year-old mare, and you... you wonder how often she's won 200,000, and I don't think she's got any black type for breeding, but she does now. That might have been part of the motivation for her to stay in training. Happy to welcome Michael Wright to the show on the strength of Nantucket Red's win Saturday at Tampa in the Wayward Lass. Michael, well done. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. it was nice for the owner, too, to win. You know, I know it's a just a small stake, but they all count. So she ran
very
good.
Much. Well, and you know, I suppose we should get some of the sadness out of the way first for Mr. Bringis. And of course, Ashley had trained the mare off and on as well. And one of the first things I thought of when I saw this Saturday afternoon, you know, was Ashley. And so I was pleased on a number of fronts. It was a nice win.
Yes, it was. I mean, she did, you know, she did train him for quite a while for her dad. He was a nice man, and it was very unfortunate what happened. And, you know, we have to go just carry on, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. You know, your involvement here was really an interesting sidelight to this, and when I mentioned it yesterday, it also triggered a bunch of memories that we got to ask about. And a bunch of people wrote to me, and they said, "Oh, you know, ask him about you know, Maryland and about John Passero and Mr. Dutrow Sr. And you've had a tremendous career in the United States."
Yes, I have. We've done fairly well. I used to go to Maryland. I went there about 14 years in a row. And because I always liked Maryland. When I was a young boy, I was 16 years old. I went with a trainer called Carl Chapman, which he's passed now, but he was a very successful trainer. And I was just a young boy. And I went to Maryland, and I said, once I start training, this is where I want to come in the winter. And because I like Maryland, you know. So that's how I decided to go to Maryland, and that's where I met my wife too. Same in Maryland.
Michael, talk about your background and coming to the United States. You know, how'd you make the choice to come to the U.S. to begin with?
Well, when I started training for Bruno, I used to train for Bruno Schickeners.
Yes.
For quite a while. I trained for him for, I think, 11 or 12 years. And he always wanted to race in the winter. So that's how I came to go to Maryland. I said, well, let's go to Maryland. And that's how I started. And we used to stable at Bowie all the time, which I liked. I liked the track at Bowie. I used to get them ready for Greenwood in the spring. I would buy, you know, in Toronto. And I'd claim a few because Bruno likes to claim. And we claimed a few in just to get ready for Greenwood. And I probably ended up leading trainer there a couple of years in the spring, you know.
Sure. Bring us back to your background and you know, your training, you know, origin and your work around horses from childhood, because one of the horses that we brought up yesterday as an aside, we talked about Scott Zanna with Rich Migliori. We had so much fun, and you know, you were like 25 years old at that time and had a string.
Yeah. Well, she was an exceptional mare. I mean, we bought her in a sale for $10,000, and it was we never raced her at two. She was kind of small. We kind of put her away, and then we took her to New Orleans for the winter, and I didn't race her there. I just got her ready for Woodbine, and I think at Woodbine she went in four or five in a row at Woodbine. And then we tried the Prioress in Belmont, which, you know, she win. And then we went to Maryland. And I think she got beat in Maryland. She had a bad trip, and she finished third, I think. But then my son got her, don't forget now, my son had a, I have a son, Mike White Jr.
Yeah.
Well, he took her to Florida, I think the year after, to win the state there with her. So, she, you know, we kept her, kind of kept her in the family.
Well, it's you know, you mentioned that Prioress win. One of the other things that it triggered yesterday that I brought up with Migliori was the success of Robin Platts, and you know, there's a jock who you know, had a fabulous career and is just not that familiar.
Well, to me, he was probably the best rider in Canada. I know Sonny Hawley we had, and that, I mean, Sonny was great too, but I always put Platts along Sonny Hawley, the two of them. They were probably the best two Canadian riders ever. That's how good he was. And when I went to New York, someone said to me, why would you bring a rider? I said, I was trying to lie, because he was giving me the gears. And I said, you don't have any riders like Platts there.
I love it. I love it. Wow. You talk about streaks, and you know, Scott Zanna herself went, you know, she won four in a row during that period, and right now you're on a run. I can't even compare it to anything, Michael. Since the start of the winter, you're 7 for 7. It's crazy.
No, 6 for 6.
6 for 6. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I got good help, eh? I got a good assistant, you know. I brought in an assistant from Toronto, and you know, he's helping out pretty good. So. But it's temper, and you know, you run away, you can win. You got a chance.
Well, it started. Your first starter this winter at Tampa was Nantucket Red, wins an allowance, then Decimator, Distinctly Blue, and Call Her Joey through the end of the year, right? And now, you know, looking at the beginning of this year, Nantucket Red wins the stake on Saturday, and then More Chances, you know, wins on Sunday. So 6 for 6 with 5 different horses.
Yeah. Yeah, and we run one tomorrow, which, you know, we got a big chance in the 8th race. So we'll see what happens. No, I mean, that was funny you said I'm 7 for 7, maybe.
I'm anticipating. There you go. Victor's destiny tomorrow in the 8th. And with Olaf Hernandez again. And I know very little about Hernandez, but obviously you like what you see.
Well, he comes every morning at 6, so I know he's keen.
Nice.
And all he wants to do is help, so we can help him just the same way. And he's done a good job.
How, you know, you mentioned Michael Jr. You know, your career is interesting. I get the sense from the stats that, you know, there's been a period where you really weren't working full time against you know, with a string. You know, talk about how many horses you got right now, and you know what you're looking to do at this stage.
Well, we get right now at Tampa, we have 10. And Woodbine, I took off this year because of the virus. I had one horse. You know, I just played around. But I'm getting near the end of my career anyway. You know, I've done it for 60 years. And it just, you know, I'm not, the health situation at Woodbine wasn't that great. So I just played around with one or two horses all summer. But I haven't had a big outfit for quite a while now. You know, I usually carry 5 or 6 of my own. That's it. And if I got good help, then I'll, you know, I'll go and I'll reach and claim a few. I got a call.
You sound congested, but well, it, you know, it's pretty obvious that your horsemanship bona fides are pretty clear, and I cannot remember, Michael, you know, mentioning a name of a horseman and having, you know, so many different people, you know, reach out to me. And you know, Ron Gierkink had wonderful things to say from DRF, and Mark Cassie wanted your number so he could call you. And you really lit people up. Richie Migliori, you know, yesterday talking about Scott Zanna, and it's very, really kind of nice.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, that's nice. You know, people, you know, think of you. I mean, I've known Mark Cassie for a long time, eh? He's in Toronto now, but when he was there himself all the time. And Ron Gierkink, I've known for a long time. All them people I know. And I've just kind of, you know, I'm getting old now, and I'm just kind of playing around a little. That's all I'm doing.
Hey.
People are asking.
No doubt. I couldn't resist the chance to, you know, to reach out and celebrate this win. Is what is John going to do now that she's got black type? Is he gonna bring her home to the farm and breed her, or are you going to go on and continue the season with her, Nantucket Red?
Well, I don't know. I don't train for him in Toronto. He has a train in Toronto. He always gives me a couple for the winter, you know.
Okay.
So, but this year I don't know, because I don't know what he's going to do.
Interesting. Well, either way, it. You know, between this win and Marty McGee writing that little piece about you last week when you were going into the weekend, you know, 4-for-4 to start the meet, irresistible chance to bring Michael Wright out and into the spotlight a little bit.
Thank you so much. Anyway,
Michael, not at all. Continued success. I appreciate the visit, and I'll be down for Tampa Bay Derby week and look forward to, I'll introduce myself.
Yeah, sure will. I'll be in a, yeah, make sure you do.
I will. Michael Wright, Nantucket Red, the 7-year-old mare, wins the Wayward Lass, and he's on a tremendous run here, 6-for-6 going into tomorrow, and a chance to get that 7-for-7. Let's take a break here. Glenn Kozak's going to join us from NYRA, talk about the construction projects at Saratoga and this Wilson Chute concept, which has got people intrigued. More after this. Hour 2 at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents...